this is good the way it is, it's, okay. Today is September 11th, a very auspicious date, 2011, and in a few moments, the Ribbono Shel Olam has privileged me to begin my 53rd year of teaching Torah. We begin at 5:30 sharp, and it's 5:30, 53rd year. Here at Samul Fenecha Adonai Elohai, Shelo Yerat Bevata Kalal Yadi, Velo Ekashel Bedva Halachav Yismachu Bi Haverai, Velo Amal Tamei Tahar, Velo Al Tahar Tamei, Velo Yikashu Haverai Bedva Halachav Yismach Behem. Ki Adonai Yitain Chachma Mipiv Dat Utfuna, Gal Einai Vabita Niflaot Meitoratecha. And who can say it better than the beautiful prayer Chazal put down? And halavai, it should all become true. To give you a drop of background on the class, my name is Aaron Rakefet, and I'm a YU product with a little bit of Lakewood in me, and somewhat polished by Bnei Akiva, and now I don't have to give you my life experiences because it's all been published. As I mentioned in our brief talk Monday last, I also have a doctorate in Jewish history from Bernard Rebel Graduate School, where Mendel is hoping to get a master shortly. I have two masters from there, and then a doctorate. And as I mentioned to you, Rabbi Koopman said to me back in 71 when I started teaching in Mechala, do something a little different. Combine being a Rosh Yeshiva, which I was in New York, and a doctorate in Jewish history. And I got involved in responsa literature. It caught on so that later I gave a second year class in BMT, and when the Kollel began a formal program of study in 78, the boys appointed me to the faculty of Gris Kollel. And as I mentioned, thank God I had a specialty that no one has gone into, because mi anochi to rival Rabbanan Lichtenstein, giving a shi'in and gemara, shas, shainim, Rabbanan knows it all by heart. And Jewish philosophy, chumash, all right, these are all fascinating fields. But responsa literature caught me. And this has been an ongoing course. I haven't repeated a lecture now in about 20 plus years, dealing with some major topics in responsa literature. Ultimately, when you study and you get involved, it broadens your vista and gives you a little bit insight into Psak and what Psak is about. And it elevates you above the learning that the yeshiva gave you. I always say that I always teach what I don't know, and the Rav taught us this. The Rav always used to tell us, if you're going to give shiur in something, pick on something you don't know. That way, not only will the students learn, but you'll also learn. In my case, I've been teaching what I don't know for 53 years now, and Baruch Hashem, a little bit has rubbed off on me. Now, the topic we're involved with is a real contemporary topic, mixed ethnic marriages. And I got involved with the topic because last year we had five couples in the Kollel who were simply inter-ethnically married. All five were cases where the boys were Sfadim, Eidot HaMizrach, and the girls were Ashkenaziyot. And I need not tell you this raises tremendous halachic problems. I also want to mention, while I was, I believe, in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, I picked up a book by Rabbi Chaim Jachter, if I'm pronouncing the name right. So you should recognize the name. He's a YU graduate. He's a bit of a posek or a good posek. He's on a Beit Din. He's Masadik Gittin. I believe he teaches in one of the high schools in Teaneck or in that greater area. And in Gray Matters, Volume 3, Exploring Contemporary Halachic Challenges, published in 2008. I just want to mention that he devotes an entire chapter to the question of interethnic marriages, quoting many of the sources we quote, some of the sources he doesn't have, some he has different sources, but I found it very, very fascinating. Ashreinu shezachinu lekach, that this has become a problem. We have a miracle in Israel. If you go to the Kotel Friday night and just look around at the crowd that's there and see the different types of Jews, see white Jews and black Jews and then Jews whose skin color is in the middle, and every type of background and every language that you can imagine is spoken. And if you don't want to go to the Kotel, just walk over to Machon Lev and walk around Machon Lev and see what you pick up. And you'll see Russians and Ethiopians and French and British and South Africans and Australians and South Americans and Canadians and Americans. And we come from every different culture under the world, every language, every minhag. And here we have a kibbutz goliot, and we're striving to become one nation. I need not tell you that this halacha, and I'm not going to go into great detail, we spent time in it last year, and I trust it's a sugya you're familiar with. This goes into the whole problem, the whole sugya in Masechet Pesachim, Daf Nun Amid Bet, Daf Nun Aleph Amid Aleph, and it's a very famous sugya of Makom Shenahagu. Every community has its own customs. How much do these customs obligate you? And the classic example in the Gemara is, how far can you travel on Friday? I need not tell you that you're allowed to travel on Friday. There's no isim halacha. I, for one, cannot understand the Jews in Borough Park who leave for the mountains at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't understand it. I have to be honest with you. I consider myself a frum Jew, but I look at these Jews. They look frum. They look Hasidish. And we all know the stories with people traveling late. And I have a policy, and it's PA's problems, but whenever I'm invited to be scholar in residence, I never fly up on Friday. If you invite me to be scholar in residence, and I can accept, I'm coming on Thursday, I'm not coming on Friday. The hadava muvan me'alav. I always live with the cloud, the Goldberg aphorism. Whenever something goes wrong, it goes wrong on Erev Shabbos, period. I don't have to elaborate. So, of course, if you have a custom not to travel on Friday in this community and you go to another community, is the custom still binding? And that's the famous sugya, that's the famous Gemara, and custom, makom shenahagu, minchag, how long is it binding? When do you remember the community? When do you leave the community? I need not tell you that this concept of Makom Shenahagu, the community you belong to, has unbelievable implications with the question of Yontif Sheni. Yontif Sheni will soon be here, and all of you will face the problem, what are you going to do on Sukkot? Will you have 3 days in a row, or will you have a respite on Friday? And I need not tell you that if you take the point of view that Yontif Sheni is dependent upon the community you come from, then anyone who isn't an aliyah has to observe 2 full days. If you take the point of view that Yontif Sheni has nothing to do with the community that you belong to, but it deals with where your feet are, like, for the sake of argument, Purim, no one is more Yerushalmi than Aaron Rakefet. Nevertheless, if I'm on Tel Aviv, on Yudalid, I have to observe Purim on Yudalid. And it has nothing to do with what community I belong to. It has nothing to do with my wife, nothing to do with my apartment, nothing to do with my bank account, nothing to do where my car is. If you're in Tel Aviv, you're Tel Aviv. Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim. Well, if that's the case, then of course it is forbidden to observe a second day Yontif. If you go and Davin Musaf, when Rakefet is driving his car, you are saying Brachot Levatola. If you're making Kiddush when Yitz Reuben is playing with his computer, then you are saying Brachot Levatola. So this is a tremendous issue in Yontif Sheni, and it comes up. Yitzchak, you are world famous. Everyone across the world, wherever I was in the United States and Canada, everyone is asking me, who is this Rabbi Reuben? And they're all confused. Is he conservative? Is he Orthodox? Yet everyone was blown away by the story of the Havdalah with the wine and the Kiddush and the Rav, and you're leaving the wine over in the frigidaire. People were just blown away by that story. So everyone is confused, and I say to all the thousands listening across the world, remain confused, because sometimes human beings are not easy to comprehend. We are perplexed human beings, and we represent many different trends in our lifestyle and flight. Now, and so this is the Gemara Makom Shenagu, which has to play a big role in any question of interethnic marriages. Then I want to also mention a minhag, and I showed you in it was the last Sheyur of last year or the next to last Sheyur. A minhag is very important. We're living at a time, unfortunately, and I have a lot of steam to leave off, and I, depending upon how things go at the book launch, because there are two other speakers who are much more important than I am, it's a big schut to have Dr. Tova Lichtenstein and Rabbi Yosef Mendelovich, Rabbi Yosef Hatzadik. So the book launch is a week from this coming Tuesday. It's September 20th at the Great Synagogue, 7:30 p.m. Everyone is invited. Your wife is invited. Your children are invited. Your parents are invited, and your grandparents as well. It'll be advertised in this week's Torah Tidbits in Jerusalem Post Friday and in Haaretz's English section, although I'm not happy about that, but Geffen says they have readers there who will be interested. Anyway, I have a lot of steam to let off. And one of the things that bothers me that I saw in America and practically put me under is graduates of this very kolo have such a attitude towards Torah, towards halacha. It's only a minhag, it's only the Rabbanan, it's the Masorah, you know, we can forge a new Masorah, and they are doing it, they are creating what to me appears to be a new conservative Judaism. But be it as it may, I showed you from the Otzah HaGoinim, if you recall, that the Goinim took minhag so seriously that Reb Shvira Gaon saw a Nisa D'Oraita in this week's Pasha, Lo Pasig Gvul Rishonim, that has to do with transgressing a minhag. Now, where did this question first come up in the state of Israel? Interethnic marriages is recent. I need not tell you in the Haredi world until today, you don't see interethnic marriages. In the Tzioni Dati world, interethnic marriages are all over, evidently in the YU world as well, and we have endless interethnic marriages. But this problem is only the last 20 years, I would say, has it gone into the headlines. The original problem came up, and this was our final shear of last year, and this problem hit me in the face in Borough Park this past summer. Do me a favor, please turn on the air conditioning. You know how to do it?
Sure.
Okay, great. This problem hit me in the face this past summer in the shtibbel I've been davening for the last 15 years. And you have to understand me, in this shtibbel, which is about a block and a half from the apartment we rent during the summer or during the time we're in the United States, it's our base. This shtibbel is named after Reb Moshe Bick. I'm the only one in the shtibbel. I have Big Yechis. I'm the only one in the shtibbel who actually knew Reb Moshe Bick. I write about him in my new book. Secondly, I'm the only one in the shtibbel without a beard. Thirdly, I'm the only one in the shtibbel who has quite a few talmidim among the Hasidim who daven there, who all listen to my shirim via the website. So this year, when I was in the shtibbel, and evidently I'm trying to remember when I just came in or in the middle of my visit there, they were mechabed me with an aliyah, and I made my bracha, my speech, everything is in Sfardik, Kavara Sfardit. So some wise Alec asked me, how come I say Baruch Atah if it's written Boruch Atah? So I responded to him very simply, tell me, I hear the way you daven, Asher Kiddushani, it's written Kiddushanu, no right or wrong. Vitzivani, I say, it says Vitzivanu. I say, if you're allowed to talk that way, I'm allowed to talk my way. And of course, this is the tremendous question, Shibolet, Sibolet, the Mishnah Brura deals with it, all of you have to be familiar with this question. And it's a very fascinating question. Who can be like the Briska Rav? They say Rav Velvel used to say Kriyat Shema in a few different tabarot, a few different pronunciations, but that was Rav Velvel. An average Jew has to say one Kriyat Shema, and all right, are you Yosei? Now, what's fascinating about this question, that the greatest machmir, and this is our final words of the Shia last year, the world, you know, has these primitive attitudes. Everyone walks around. If you go to Lakewood, every YU guy is a kaldat. If you go to YU, every Lakewood guy is a fanatic. If you go a little older and a little wiser, you learn very quickly that in Lakewood, there are many of people who are open-minded, there are many Talmidim that I have the privilege of being their Rebbe via the website. There are many people in YU that are Talmidei Chachamim, Muflakim, and Medartek in Mitzvot, Kalak Chachamura. You got to be a little bit older to understand this. So generally speaking, if you go over to someone today, say, Rav Avram Yitzchak, a Kohen Cook, he'll say, Tzioni, a Mekel. You should know on the major questions in Halakha that we have faced in the first part of the 20th century, the greatest machmir in the world was Rav Avram Yitzchak Kohen Cook. An unbelievable machmir. On the issue of Geirut, unbelievable. On the issue of changing Havara of Nusach, tremendous machmir. I quoted to you, it's all on the tape. Don't want to re-quote it again, but to simply put it, he felt that Ad Yemot HaMashiach, each Eidah has to continue its pronunciation. He took issue with the Mishpatei Uziel, with Rav Uziel, who was the Sfadi chief rabbi, and Rav Uziel was lenient, and Rav Kook took him to task, and particularly if you're a Yemenite, Chas v'chalila, the Yemenites should stop their pronunciation. The Yemenites know how to differentiate between a gimel and a dalet and a hey and an ayin and a chet, and their pronunciation is infinitely more correct than anyone else's. And you cannot change from Habara Ashkenazis to Habara Sfadit. You certainly can change if you're a Yemenite to Habara Sfadit to Hora or Habara Ashkenazis. And he was a tremendous machmir. This is Minig Avoteinu, Makom Shenagu. This is our community. This is our Mesorah, this is our tradition. You all know that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, until today, when he davens b'havara Ashkenazis. Am I right or wrong? Have you heard him make Kiddush? Have you heard him daven b'echat Torah? Rabbi Aaron davens havara Ashkenazis. Your humble servant attempted back in 69 to retain havara Ashkenazis. And then I saw my children laughing at me. And I was a very smart man. I understood already. I was a youngster. I was not much older than you are back in 1969 when I came in Aliyah. And I understood a very basic message. If I'm raising my children here, they have to fit into a certain mold. I can't raise children here like I would have raised them in the Bronx or in Brisk. And I switched to Habara Sfadit. Of course, that Friday night, I always tell the story, I come to the Kotel, and I see a big crowd up front, and I hear voices like angels singing, L'chuna Ranana, and I push my way up front, and it's the Makela of the Rabbanit HaTzvait, and Rav Goren is with them for Shabbos. And I push my way to Rav Goren, and I tell him I heard a shiur from him in the Rav when he came in, when the Rav was machaber him in the mid-50s, I believe it was 56, 57, and I heard a shiur. I was in the room, I was actually sitting right in front, and the Rav Goren jumped on me because I was smiling when he said something, and the Rav said, no, I'll say it in English, I forget, you don't know Yiddish, but he's laughing because I said the same svara. It was, I know what it was about, I don't want to go into detail now, it'll take me 50 minutes to explain. And Rav Goren was all smiles that he was machaven to the Rav svara. It dealt with Beitin, the Koach of Beitin, that Beitin acts and on their own, or also as the shlich of Klal Yisrael. So I asked Rav Goren about changing the Havara Sfardit, and by the time he got done with me, he convinced me that even Rashi spoke Havara Sfardit. So Baruch Hashem, my children grew up and totally integrated. So I model HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I had enough seichel to change Tabaras Svadit. Now once you change and you pronounce Tabaras Svadit for 42 years already, I can no longer even pronounce Ashkenazis. And I can show you very simply, you're asking me, what am I talking about? Very simply. Geffen keeps on sending me books to sign. I don't know, this is like a new minhag. You only buy a book if you have signed it. So I sign on top of Washington Avenue, I sign Aaron Rakefet in English, and underneath Washington Street, I sign Aaron Rakefet in Hebrew. So someone from Geffen, the second time they brought me books, asked me, why don't I sign on top Aaron Rothkopf? He's right. Washington Avenue, I was Aaron Rothkopf. He's absolutely right. But I told him, for me to write Aaron Rothkopf today, I have to concentrate something unbelievable. To write Aaron Rakefet takes 1 second. The same thing with the Havara. Baruch Ator, very hard for me. Baruch Ator, Baruch Hashem. No, how can we be Mate? How can we be Mekil? Of course, Rav Kook was no Talahachmi. Rav Uziya was Mekil. And let me pick up with new material now. Very fascinating material. The second chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog. Let's say a few words about his life. He was a portrait in courage. I believe there is a DVD about Rav Herzog's life. Rav Herzog, first of all, was autodidactic. This is an amazing concept. His father was Rav in Paris. Rav of the Eidah Haredit in Paris, Rav Yoel Herzog. He never went to a yeshiva. Studied with his father, had a photographic memory. They say Rav Herzog was the greatest bucky of his generation. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula by heart. And there are people like this, blessed with a photographic memory. You see Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, there's Rav Yoshua Cohn. I can testify that Rav Yoshua Cohn can do the pin trick. It's my son-in-law's Rebbe, and I know him very well. He can do the pin trick. Rav Hirschsprung of Montreal, this is a certain type of memory. Rav Herzog knew everything. He corresponded with the Ritbaz. He considered Rav Yaakov David Ben Zev Volovsky, the Rav of Slutsk, who founded Slutsk Yeshiva, which later moves to Kletz, which later moves to Lakewood. If you've studied Rakefet Aaron by my good friend Aaron Rakefet in the first volume, there are monographs on the Ritbaz and on Rabbi Zalman Meltzer and how it gets to Kletz to Slutsk to Kletz to Lakewood. Lakewood is Lakewood today. And the Ritbaz was a going idea. And he authored a commentary on the Yerushalmi, a dual commentary, Ke'en Rashi, Ke'en Tosfat. No, in order to publish it, he needed a fortune of money. Since he needed a fortune of money, in Eastern Europe, Jews did not have heavy money. So he wound up traveling. He winds up in Paris. He winds up in France. He winds up in Frankfurt. And in Paris, Rav Herzog met him, and they became like a father and son, correspondents. The Slutsker Rav later winds up in America, in Chicago. From Chicago, he becomes Rav in Svat, and Rav Herzog has a nightmare, Rosh Hashanah, I believe it was 1913, you can check Rakefet Aaron, that the Sefer Torah in Svat is burning. And Motsoi Rosh Hashanah, a telegram arrives that the Ritbaz died at the exact moment he had that dream. Now, Rav Herzog marries a lady from London, goes on to get a doctorate in marine biology in London. He knew 9 or 10 different languages fluently. They desperately wanted him to become the second president of Yeshiva College after Rabbi Revel died. Yeshiva College wanted to give him an honorary doctorate, and he wrote a beautiful letter, which I have in my possession. He said, we're upset that we have our first doctorate, and you want to give me a second doctorate. By then he was chief rabbi of Israel, and the Kanoim here would have burned him alive. So he waived the honorary doctorate. But he becomes chief rabbi of Ireland. with all due respect to the title of Chief Rabbi of Ireland, it's like I was Chief Rabbi of Maplewood, New Jersey. You understand? If I wanted to become a Hasidic Rebbe, I can call myself the Maplewood Rebbe. You can't be a Rebbe with a title from Israel. It has to be some little place in Chutz Laretz. So the Schnippishnuk Rebbe, the Maplewood Rebbe. All right, the Maplewood Rebbe, and I'll have a gabbai, and I'll go with a golden cane, and everyone will stand up for me. But in reality, Maplewood, when I was rabbi there, built the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County, how many frum Jews were there? You can count them. When I first came, we didn't have a minyan, all right? I'm proud when I went in Aliyah. It was a thriving community, which it continues to be until today. So, Baruch Hashem, he was chief rabbi in Ireland. Chief Rabbi in Ireland, Rabbi Yeshua Hutner, my revered neighbor, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, told me that he once said when Rabbi Maimon visited there, Rabbi Maimon, Rabbi Fishman Maimon, dang, these are famous names in the history of the State of Israel. He later becomes the first minister of religion, great Mizrahi leader, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Fishman, later Maimon. So Rabbi Maimon visits Rav Herzog in Ireland, and Rav Herzog says to him, Nach Abdullah, he was a shy individual. And the Rebbetzin says to him, it's all in Yiddish, but I have to say it in English to you. The Rebbetzin says to him, open your mouth, Zagim, Zagim Shein. She pushed him. So Rav Herzog finally says to him, he'll do anything to go to Israel. This was 1935. He says, if he can find a position, even as a shamus, in a shul in Yerushalayim. And 2 years later, he was elected chief rabbi of Israel. It was a bitter campaign. Rav Chalap, Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap, the grandfather of Rabbi Zvulun Chalap, whom I trust you all know, was the candidate against him. And there was a lot of anti-Herzog feeling because he had a doctorate. But nevertheless, he was elected. And there was no man who ever grew more, was ever greater in stature, or ever suffered more than Rabbi Herzog. If you look at his picture in 37, a young man with a little black beard, you look at his picture in 57, he died in 59, 10 years later he aged 50 years. What are we to age 20 years, I should say. 20 years later he aged 50 years. Que pasa? What happened? He was the Rav during the Holocaust. He went to the DP camps. He pleaded with the Pope, get those Jewish children out of the cloisters, out of the monasteries. He was the Rav when the State of Israel was declared. I don't have to tell you, Friday evening the state was declared. On Saturday, the Egyptians were bombing Tel Aviv. The Aguna, the problems, the shilas, what this man was hit with. In 20 years, he aged 50 years. He had two sons, a very famous Rebbetzin who did amazing tzedakah work. I yet had the schut of having met her. I don't have to tell you the hospital for elderly people, the Sarah Herzog Hospital, is named in her memory. I believe it was originally called Esrat Nashim. You can correct me if I'm wrong. And Givat Shaul. And one son was Yaakov, Reb Yaakov, the Ridvaz, Reb Yaakov David. One son was Reb Yaakov David Herzog, named after the Ridvaz. He was the ambassador to Canada. He was, until a few months ago, the greatest Talmud Chacham who was an ambassador for the State of Israel. I can only tell you that about 6-7 weeks ago, Bibi Netanyahu appointed a new ambassador to Canada, to the United Kingdom, I should say, Danny Taub. Danny Taub, should live and be well, is a first-rate Talmud Chacham on the highest level. He is also Aaron Rakefet's granddaughter-in-law's first cousin. Their mothers are sisters. Danny Taub, tremendous Yechis, a Taub, Majitz on his father's side, Anunzdorf on his mother's side, Ungarische Yechis, first-rate Talmud Chacham. He and Yaakov David Herzog are on a similar level. Rabbi Yaakov David did not live long. He died in his early 50s. He was very close to us. He lived around the corner from the original home of BMT on Rehov HaBarbanel, and he used to daven in BMT when he was in the State of Israel, and Nebuch the Ribbono Shel Olam calls him the best. His brother, who was a general in the IDF and went on to become the president of the State of Israel, was of course Reb Chaim Herzog, Reb Chaim Halevi Herzog, named after Reb Chaim Briska. And I can say Eidut Nemana. I once spent the Shabbos in Herzliya Pituach, I believe it was, a very wealthy community, and the president had a residence there. He was there for Shabbat, and I davened in the same shul where he davened, and I can say that Nemana, that the president of the State of Israel, a Levi, went to wash the hands of the Kohanim with his bodyguards following him. So I have to tell you, this was a lesson in humility. And he was the son of the chief rabbi. Now, the chief rabbi's writings, unfortunately, and we always have this, what a person prepares in his lifetime is on a high level. Whatever the Rav finally published, and I don't have to go into details, if you've seen the documentary I brought into the world on the Rav, I speak about it in the documentary, I write about it, I've lectured in Rus Kolel extensively on it. The Rav was a perfectionist. So when he finally published something, it was polished 100 times over. What comes out now, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, myself included, has the chutzpah to publish the Rav's Torah. So it's not on the same level, it varies, it depends, it's this one, that one, the way he writes, his interpretation, his understanding, and no one who's writing the Rav's Torah is the Rav. So you have to be zeicher to publish. I can give you many examples. Rav David Zvi Hoffman, I trust you all know the name of David Zvi Hoffman, so what he published in his lifetime on Vayikra and Devarim is classic. What was published from unedited manuscripts on the Reshit, Shmot, it's not on the same level. So Rav Herzog, nothing was really published during his lifetime. He had no time. He answered. He wrote answers. He wrote. He answered. Finally, after his death, they put together a number of volumes called Heichal Yitzchak. Many of the Tshuvot are unfinished symphonies. Some are finished symphonies. And I'm now quoting from Heichal Yitzchak on Orechayim, Siman Aleph. And very fascinating tshuva to Rav Tzvi Mushkowitz and Bnei Brak from 1951. And let me just see. He writes the tshuva to Hadak the Tzvi Mushkowitz. Hadak the Tzvi Mushkowitz. And what is the question? Exactly the problem we're dealing with. Can you change the Havara Sfadet to Havara Sfadet? Now, let me give you a little bit of background. Why would this question come up? What happened here? What happened here? We have Havara Sfadet. Ben Gurion was a Sfadi. Golda Meir was a Sfadi. Yitzchak Ben Tzvi was a Sfadi. Zalman Shazar was a Sfadi. What happened here? But you see, this is the nature of the human being. When you start something new, Yitzchak, what's your question? When you start something new, you have to have a rebellious streak in you. You have to show you're different. It's like the messianists who are destroying the Rebbe's memory. They walk around with that the little yellow, blue pin. The Rebbe's Mashiach, you can tell right away. It's like a club. They're walking around and you see the pin. It's psychological. We're rebelling, we're creating. The same thing with the Hasidic world. When the Hasidic world began, why did the Vilna Gaon put them at the Cheirim? Among the reasons, they started a new Nesach Svila, Nesach Svadi. What gave them the right? But they're a new movement. They're different. We're not Litaim, we're not Ashkenazim. We're a new movement, we're a new people. We have to show we're different. We dress differently, we act differently. We daven differently. I don't have to tell you, davening is the most important thing of any Jewish observance. We daven three times a day. Look how many hours a week we spend davening. Change the nusach. You're in a new club. So when the state of Israel began, this was a great rebellion. You have to understand, these Jews were coming in Aliyah. If you asked your Rebbe, you went to the Satmar Rebbe, it's the famous story, 1956, the Satmar Rebbe visited Israel for the first time since he tried to settle here in 46 and left. And the Satmar Rebbe is in Kir HaYovel now, and the chief of police of Kir HaYovel came from Satmar, was from a Satmar house, a Satmar home. And he went to see the Rebbe. And this was written up in every newspaper. And the Rebbe looks at him, and the Rebbe says to him, what would your father say to see you standing before me without a beard and payas? And the chief of police says, Rebbe, if my father had not listened to you, he would be standing here with me. Okay? And the Rebbe gave him a very enigmatic answer. Miyamashach tshuva getan fatafa. We did a lot of repentance. Whatever that means, that's what the Satmar Rebbe answered him. But you see, Zionism was a rebellion. They didn't stay home, they didn't stay there. The Belzer Rebbe said stay, the Satmar Rebbe said stay. The Gera Rebbe, to a certain extent, said stay. Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva, to a certain extent, would have said stay. And they're rebelling. They came in Aliyah. They're building Israel. They're draining the swamps. What was here at the time? It was a midbar. There was nothing here. Koama Hashem zachati la chesed nurayach lech peichacharei ba midbar be'eretz lo zarua. What was here? Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And they rebelled. We're Zionists. We're speaking Havarah Sfartit. We are ingathering the exiles. The Sfeidot HaMizrach are right. East Europeans are wrong. And of course, everyone began to speak Sfardit here. And this Dr. Mushkowitz is asking Rav Herzog, can we change? Now, Rav Herzog's approach is very basic. There are 12 different tribes. There are 12 different gates to Gan Eden. The Ari introduces a 13th Shah. What is it called? Shah HaKlali. That for all those Jews that don't fit into one of the tribes, they come into the general gate. But from here we see that every language and every structure and every variation is legitimate. We cannot say that someone is not Yotzei his Chovah because he said Sibolet instead of Shibolet. And I don't have to tell you, there's ample sources for this. Now, evidently in the question he was asked, and here we're coming to a very important point, and I'll give you a gem from my Rebbe in a moment. In the question he was asked, evidently, the person asking the question quoted the Chatam Sofer. How many of you are of Hungarian extraction? How many of you know Rav Moshe Sofer? How many of you heard, studied in BMT in the golden years and heard Rakepet Sheyorim on Chadash Asur Min HaTorah? You remember the Chatam Sofer? He took a Mishnah in Arla where the Mishnah says, turn it down to 22, where the Mishnah says, Chadash, the new grain, the new tefuah, is forbidden by the Torah. Right? You all know what the Issa Chadash is. Every baking in Brooklyn today says Yashan. Many of the products you buy in Brooklyn, in Queens, in the Five Towns, in Teaneck, in Los Angeles, says not only a Heksha, but Yashan. All right, in Israel we don't have a problem because we don't have a winter wheat. There are many advantages to living in Israel. That's one of them. Another advantage is there is no chet of anyone in the world to live in Chutz Laretz who doesn't drink dairy products or doesn't use milk. He's worried about the cows, the injections. In Israel, all the injections, and this is from generations already, are done in a way that there's no shaila whatsoever of making the cow trefa. So if you have a problem with your dairy products in America, come in Aliyah. Without dairy products, you can't be healthy. Sakonet nefashat. So you have to come in Aliyah. So
what injection?
They give the cows injections against disease, all types of hormones. And in America, Rav Heschel Schechter doesn't use any dairy products. You don't know that?
No, that's his problem.
Listen, if he'd be an individual, it's one thing. Rav Heschel is looked up to. He's the most popular Rosh Hashiva in America. That's a different story. Okay? That's a different story that I will deal with, if time allows, at Heichel Shlomo.
They're not graduate Hebrew.
Rabbi Sadeh, please. Rav Heschel's Rav Heschel. Have respect. Some of them are his Talmidim. So we have to give respect. How many of you have come to the Rav Heschel Shas? Okay, you have to give respect. My oldest friend, you know how far we go back? Read the book and you'll understand. Study the book. Okay? It's not just to read, you have to study. Okay, anyway, coming back here. So the Chatam Sofer was very opposed to any change. Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. And you all know what went on in Hungary. He fought the reformers tooth and nail. And Dr. Moshkowitz evidently asked Rav Herzog, how can we innovate if the Chatam Sofer is accepted as one of the greatest poskim of the Torah world? And look, you know what I mean by that? Let me clarify, gentlemen, you're old, you have to learn on a high level now. You're not kids, you're getting smicha, you're learning, you're in graduate school, you're kollel, post. Let me explain something to you. How many of you know Reb Moshe Feinstein's Jewish? How many of you have been raised in a Litvisha Welt? How many of you spoke and learning with Halacha Lemaisa with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik? This is not Rav Avadya Yosef. Rav Avadya Yosef, when he writes a tshuva, he writes everything. The Litvisha went with a certain svarer, went with Rishonim, with the Rambam, with the Pesachim, the Shulchan Aruch, with the Ramah, the Shachan, the Taz. Achronim, they barely looked at. But no one ignored the Noda B'Yehuda or the Chatam Sofer. Oh boy. There already was a special status. Reb Moshe could ignore the Malamed Lahoya. You're all familiar with this tshuva where Reb Moshe says, Ein ha-seif ha-zeh tachet yadi. He's writing to his student, Reb Ephraim Greenblatt in Memphis. Ein ha-seif ha-zeh tachet yadi. Nu rakefet, I was just there. I went to look at Canal Street, 33 Canal Street. It's around the corner from Tiferet Yerushalayim. Old Tzar Svarim. Rav David Feinstein used to come in and have lunch with Yankel Goldman, the proprietor. They would sit for a half hour, shmuis, 40 minutes. Or Rav Moshe had to say to his son, Rav David, Davidul, Tuma Teva, bring me a Malamed Lahoyel from Yankel. Borrow a Malamed Lahoyel from Yankel Goldman. Rakefet bought, Rothkopf bought one there. What's the big deal? But no, Hulo Garasetze. The Rav, they once mentioned the Malamed Lahoyel to the Rav. The Rav says, can he sign it? Can't be. Didn't want to look at it. But the Chatam Sofer, and the Chatam Sofer was so opposed, Chadash, Chasun, and Chatorah, and you want to take a more liberal attitude towards changing Havara? How you daven, how you speak Hebrew, how you say Baruch Ata Hashem? Wow. What's going on here? Chatam Sofer, I'll give you, you want another example of opposition? No, how many of you are married? No, how many of you got married in a synagogue? How are you allowed to get married in a synagogue? The Chatam Sofer, Chat Kishrayim, Chai V'Kayim, Yeldi, shouted, Minigayim, what kind of business is this? Marriage in a shul. When the great synagogue was built, they made a tanai in public that there's Kedushat Beit Knesset, but tanai they should be allowed to hold marriages there. They made a tanai in public, I still remember it. So they shouldn't have a problem with the Chatam Sofer. You know, they have an opening in the roof right in the middle of the shul where the Chatan Batala stand, they right under, they open it up. Beautiful, fine, good. Why was the Chatam Sofer so opposed to marriage in a shul? Rav David Lifshitz would not go to a wedding if it was held in a shul. Period. Wouldn't go. Wouldn't go. The story is legendary. But you see, what happened? Look at the map. And I try to explain this to my grandchildren, I get nowhere. I absolutely get nowhere, because the kids growing up here, they consider the so-called Haredim apikorsim. You know, they don't serve in the army, etc., etc. And I explain to them, you have to understand why they're like that. And the answer is very simple. The Jews left the ghetto. Mendelssohn leaves the ghetto, 1762. Reb Moshe Mendelssohn was a great-grandson. Who was his great-grandfather? No? The Rama, Reb Moshe Rissalis. Think who his great-grandfather was. And he tries to combine being a Torah Jew and life out of the ghetto. After he left the ghetto, thousands leave. Ultimately, millions leave. Ultimately, tens and tens of millions leave. No? Look what happened. How many families, b'chalalei Shabbos, intermarriage. How many goyim are walking around today with Jewish blood in them? Now, if you look at the map, Hungary is next to Germany. So it took many years. Then it's not like today. Today we're a global village. I don't have to tell you. You don't need a television anymore on a computer. You get all the news, everything happening live. It's just beyond words what a computer is. So we're a global village today. It took many years, but the Enlightenment came across the border into Hungary. And once you become enlightened, you reform Judaism. This is primitive. Whoever heard of davening in a language you don't understand? Davening in Hungary. Whoever heard of a rabbi preaching in a language you don't understand? Preach in Hungary. Ultimately, whoever heard of women being separated from men? Mixing. Whoever heard of a divine service without music? Look at the church, bring in an organ. And the Chatam Sofer stood very firm. And that's what Rav Herzog told them, that when you quote the Chatam Sofer to me, it's not necessarily a proof, because it could very well be that the Chatam Sofer was so caustic and sharp and extreme and Chadash Asur Min HaTorah because he was fighting a battle of assimilation, and we no longer are fighting that battle in Eretz Yisrael. Now, here I want to give you a golden gift. The Rav never said this publicly. And sometimes you have to watch what you say publicly, what you say privately. But the Rav, in conversation, it was in a hotel. What happened was there was an RCA convention. Is that the Pine View, if I'm not mistaken? These hotels don't exist anymore. The Pine View, the Pioneer, these were the Frum hotels. So the convention always ended on Thursday. Why did the convention end on Thursday? So the rabbis would get back to their communities in time for Shabbos. But there were many rabbis who weren't communal rabbis, or rabbis whose community said, Rabbi, take a week off, you're entitled. So the hotel would always make a special deal if you stayed through Monday. So they got the Rav one time. He had, you know, his wife was gone. He was still in fairly good health. Rebbe, stay with us. And it's a famous story. He went boat riding with them, and he was wearing a baseball hat. But that's the famous story with Shabbos, where he comes to the table Friday night. I've often told the story, and you know, I know it from my witnesses. I can even tell you the names of the rabbis. Some of them are gone already, some are ill, but some are alive yet. And the whole table is set, and the Rav says, no, take it off, clean off the table, the Rashbam, in Avei Pesachim, that nothing can be on the table when you make Kiddush. Kiddush has to inaugurate a Shabbos table. If it's on the table before Shabbos, it's Pirurim Shel Chol, to quote Rebbe's golden language. But after Kiddush, Then you can bring over the challahs and afterwards the food. It's now a suda shel Shabbat. And the waiters were all goyim. By then you don't have Jewish waiters and Jewish busboys, and they were plotzing. Everything is put on chairs, the table is cleaned off, and the rav makes kiddush, and then he signals afterwards, they make a motzi, and then they can put everything back on the table. So at that Shabbos, they were talking with Rebbe off the cuff, and he said something that has to haunt us until today. And he didn't have a black and white answer, none of us. If you think you have a black and white answer, it's a sign of immaturity. You know what he said? Why was the Chatam Sofer so extreme? Had he not been so extreme, maybe he wouldn't have pushed away so many Jews who became reformers. It's called Neologues in Hungary. And then Rebbe said, but you know, maybe had he not been so extreme and strong, there would have been no Orthodox Jews left. By being extreme and strong, he saved the fortress. He saved Torah. That's a very sensitive, very sensitive question. You know, and we all have to deal with this. How do you deal with Kirov? How do you deal with people who are totally not from? And how do you deal with a kid who went through yeshiva and had the finest rebbeim? I've met YU graduates, the finest rebbeim. And they're machalal on Shabbos. They laugh. I've met graduates of yeshiva college, Stern College, Lakewood, Satmar. They laugh. And some of them are ethical, and they're fine, and they're moral people. Others are degenerates altogether. They're on drugs. Their sexual life makes an animal look holy. But how do you deal with them? It's a fascinating question. How should I deal with my commitment from the Kollel who are creating a new concern? Partnership minyan. Partnership minyan. Thank God I'm no longer alone. While I was in Canada, they gave me the great news that Sohar, the rabbinic organization here of enlightened rabbis, with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, came out and declared it conservative Judaism. So I told my Talmud, no, I was ahead of the game. I declared it 3 years ago. How do you deal with these fellows? They put, no, what was written in the blog out of Los Angeles? Gentlemen, you awake? You guys are zombies. They put the women in the cage. No wonder Avi Shafran of Agudat Yisrael is riding high. He threw the gauntlet down. He challenged RCA to throw this rabbi out. That was to be my student. And who supported him? The other rabbi who supported him, not only as my student, before he came to the Kollel, he carried Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik on his hands. No, how do you deal with these guys? Partnership minyanim. Do we tell them you're a goy gomer? Well, no, you say, look, you're being influenced, you have to understand.
Can you define the term, what is?
Partnership minyanim is what the graduate of Lakewood, David Hartman, introduced in Talpiyot. If it's Talpiyot, Bakal, wherever it is. Not where the women, a woman, Avi Weiss, Kabbalat Shabbat, have a woman chazanit. No? Psukei de Zumra, have a woman chazanit. I told you, create a Torah. Three aliyahs, Kohen Levi Yisrael, three women. If the man is Achron, the woman is Mafti. If the woman is Achron, the man is Mafti. Baal Korei, either a man or a woman.
Avi Weiss does this?
He did it one Friday night, and the outcry was so great he has not repeated it. Yes, Avi Weiss did it. Bifneyam Vieta sent out an email. I had the misfortune of being in America, and everyone holds me responsible for what all my friends do. You hold me responsible for Heschel not eating dairy products, so they hold me responsible. Avi Weiss, with the part, they now gave it a formal name. Partnership Minyanim. I don't know who gave the name, but Rabbi Joseph Kanevsky, that's the name. Women in a cage. Could you imagine the Rav, how the Rav would react to this?
What do you mean women in
the
cage?
The machitza. We put women, I don't know, I never saw women in the cage. Not from the shuls I go to. Since women, my wife's grandmother was a tzaddeket. My wife's family is in America from 1870. A good deal of the family remains Shomer Torah mitzvah. Hundreds of people live in Israel from this family.
This is in the spirit of Max Hart, who once said, the conservative Judaism will not have women in the corral.
All right, so he went further, the corral, the cage. He limited more. Corral is bigger, a cage is small. God have mercy. This is Mishaseh Takelet. This is every feminist jumped on the bandwagon. Anyway, be it as it may, the Chatam Sofer's, what the Rav said about the Chatam Sofer is very fascinating. We have to deal with it daily. How do we react? What do we say? What do we do? How do we deal with Balei Tshuva? How do we deal with a kid, a woman once said to me, so distant from Yiddishkeit, but not her fault. She's a fourth generation like that in America. She's still Jewish with miracles. So she says to me, you treat your women with such disdain. They're not allowed to pray next to their husbands. You look down upon them. She, you know, I could just see a conservative rabbi, a reform rabbi, so brainwashed. How do you talk to them? How do you deal with them? All right. It's a fascinating question, a delicate question. Obviously, every individual case has to be dealt within its own context. With Rabbi David Hartman, I just had a tremendous battle before his new book was published. With Dubi, I don't hold back. He should know better. His new book, what he says about the Rav, you have to rip tree. It's beyond words. Beyond words to put this into print. Okay, but let it be. On Rabbi Rachman, on the Afkod condition that the Rav came out against it. Oh, my gosh.
He did come out against it.
We understand he came out against it, but the way Dubi writes, you can't believe your eyes what you'll see then. It was shown to me. People love to aggravate me. They showed it to me in Toronto. But
there's still a God in Montreal.
Montreal is a little bit different. He's a God in his own shul, but in Montreal today is more than, it's under 50% Shomer Shabbos. You have no idea what's doing in Montreal. But coming back to the Chatam Sofer, but there's no question in outreach. You can't yell and you can't shout. With honey, you get a lot further than vinegar. And you have to know how to handle it. It's not simple. The shyness you get in the outreach, sometimes they're overwhelming with kashrut, with Shabbos, with kibbut aviyim, with a parent who's not Jewish, with saying kaddish for a father who's not Jewish. And my approach is always, Bizman Hazer, we don't have to build a fence, don't have to build a wall. I know in the old city there's a fine Jew involved in outreach. He's married to an Afro-American who converted, and the Isha Gedola, and his I think it was his mother-in-law who died, and his Rebbeim told him, go to the funeral and give the greatest respect you can. And he went, and he told me the it was not a priest, the pastor, Protestants was so angry, an Orthodox rabbi, you know, it was like a challenge, but the family received dignity. All right, it's an interesting question. You can't pasuk in black and white. It depends on the circumstances. My dear students, Rav Herzog is so insightful here. To bring a proof from the Chatam Sofer may not be intellectually honest. He was dealing with a different era, with different problems. And he says, Ki hu et kaveinas keneget hamashchitim harofamim ba Hamburg. And who brought in all these changes into the synagogue. And one of the changes was Havaras Fadit. And it could be that's why he fought it so bitterly. And listen to what he says, Lahalacha. He says, Lamaaseh, I haven't changed my pronunciation. But nevertheless, in my Beit Medrash, if there's a bar mitzvah or a bar tefillah, and they're davening b'miftah svardi, I absolutely allow it. And when I daven in Yeshurin, and here you have to understand historically, when you read the Tshuva, there was no more important synagogue than Yeshurin. This is before Heichal Shlomo. This is before the great synagogue. Whoever dreamt you would have a cathedral, the great synagogue, whoever dreamt, I mean, you got to understand, Israel was so poor. And you know the story with Yeshurin. Yeshurin is the greatest mistake ever of the conservative movement. Who built Yeshurin? The United Synagogue of America, the organization of conservative congregations. And they gave Yeshurin as a gift to the Jewish people with a self-perpetuating board of trustees. And in their bylaws, the board of trustees put in that the shul must forever remain strictly in conformity with Torah and tradition. And Yeshurin, which today is the second most important synagogue in Yerushalayim, some say it's still the most important, that the great synagogue has not overtaken it, and everyone davened in Yeshurin, Professor Yeshaya Leibowitz, the chief rabbis, anyone who's a who's who davens or davened in Yeshurin. And it was a gift from United Synagogue to the Jewish people.
What
this Tshuva was written in the early 50s.
In the mid 30s.
I believe 35, 36. It can be probably in Wikipedia, there might be an article on it. The Tshuva is from 1951, but I believe it was built in the mid 30s. I'm positive it was built in the mid
30s. So that's the reason why the conservative movement was able to do it.
No, that's the United Synagogue was then much more traditional, of course, and they were powerful, and they had money, and they were Zionist, and it was a beautiful gift to the Jewish people. But I recall when I was a tourist and I was standing in the synagogue with my wife, we were touring, and a rabbi came over, and he said, no, the women have to go upstairs. I said, we're not davening. He said, no, it doesn't matter. Zalo mishaneh. And he gave me a whole argument. We were the whole group of people. I believe it was RCA group. And nevertheless, they were angry that men and women were looking at the synagogue together. But Rav Herzog says, when I daven there, and I'm given an aliyah, I pronounce the bracha in Sfardit in accordance with the minhag in the shul. And I have to tell you that this problem lives on till this very moment. Last night in my home, you know that they changed Israel. Now they only broadcast, I believe it's called digital, no longer analog. So all the TVs can't receive anything. So you have to buy a menir. I guess in English the word would be a transformer. So I bought a transformer. But I didn't understand the first thing about how to put it together. That's what you'd have sons-in-law for. So my eldest son-in-law came over after Shabbat and sets up the TV. And while he sets it all up, and it's not that hard. I mastered it. Wow, what reception. What a miracle. And he suddenly gets a call, and he's president of the shul. You don't know what problems. And I davened there, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, from the time my grandchildren, who are twins, were born 22 years ago. I left BMT, I left Gris, and I davened with my children. It's another block and a half from my house. My own shul is a block and a half, it's 3 blocks, 4 blocks from the house. So Danny, and you know what's going on. A man who davened there for 22 years that I'm davening there. And he learned how to davening watching the big chazanim in Meir Sharim. And he's a shayim b'torah mitzvah 100%. And his children are all from. You have to give credit. And he speaks perfect English. He grew up under the mandate. And he has a son-in-law, an American, a Yidat Tzaddik. And he doesn't get paid. Balabatim complained. I don't want to mention who. A very famous person in the state of Israel said, my wife and daughters are complaining, you daven in Yiddish. what that means. You daven in Yiddish, Ruch HaTorah. He's offended. He won't daven now. And they got to find the Baal Tefillah for Musaf. And then once he's not davening, the Baal Shachar, who davened in Hebrew, not Yiddish, graduate of Machon Lev, he won't daven. He says, if the other one won't daven, how can I be a chutzpahnik and daven? And my poor son-in-law, what he's going through, I look at him, I and he was a high-ranking officer in the army, and then Baruch Hashem, he does great things today. Like a kid, I see the world doesn't change. I was back in the rabbinate again. A is offended, B is upset, the rabbi's caught in the middle. No? Chester, Pennsylvania, you didn't have these problems? You didn't have machlokes? You didn't have egos? Oh my gosh. Gentlemen, right in my house last night, my poor son-in-law Danny, and he told me the story. I couldn't believe my ears. And I couldn't believe who said it to him. Talking about one of the most famous people in the state of Israel, Hashem Torah and Mitzvah. You daven in Yiddish. Rav Herzog is magnificent. And he ends off the tshuva as beautifully as you can imagine. The main thing is there should be peace among Jews. Don't stand on the Havara. Let there be peace in the shul. And if they want Havara Svardit, let it be Havara Svardit. So you see, Rav Herzog here is an infinitely greater Mekil than Rav Kook. Let me go one step further. Heichal Yitzchak Orachayim Siman Gimel. Fascinating to whom the Tshuva is written. Fascinating what it's about. Same question, only this is not Israel. Let me introduce a name that only Rabbi Rubin and I, and perhaps Michael will recognize. I had the privilege, if you've studied my new book, you will know that I worked under him for my first 2 years in Israel. Rabbi Dr. Louis Rabinowitz. Make believe you've heard the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Danny, he was chief rabbi of the British Empire. Do you know, of South Africa. Do you know why he was not chief rabbi? That he grew up in Britain. His father was a rabbi in Britain. His father was a literature rabbi, big Talmud Chacham. Why wasn't he rabbi of the British Empire? He should have become after Rabbi Hertz died. He was the logical candidate because he was a great Torah figure, a real Torah person. And he was a high-ranking chaplain in World War II. And when the British enforced the white paper after World War II, in a public speech, he took all his medals, ripped them off, and threw them on the floor and maledicted His Majesty's government. And the British always held that against them. And I got to tell you, a moron said to me the other day, came from a religious house here, raised here, he's a liberal today, married to a goya, would never give his kid a Jew, a liberal. I said to him, you're a liberal. Yeah, the liberals, I think in America there are a lot of, England there are a lot of liberals, Canada there are a lot of liberals, and they let 6 million Jews be destroyed, burned in every conceivable way, murdered. Liberals. What did a minister in Canada say? None is too many. Remember that statement? God have mercy on us, a liberal. Wow. That's Rabbi Rabinowitz. Later in life, he came in Aliyah, and he was associate editor of the Encyclopedia Judaica that brought me in Aliyah. I worked under him. We were very close, very good friends. I don't want to repeat to you what he said at my farewell party when I decided to go back to teaching full-time. The Encyclopedia was finished. It was very beautiful words that I heard from him. He was a Talmud Chacham. He had a great amount of knowledge. He was a world personality. Grew up in London, chief rabbi of South Africa. And he writes to Rav Herzog, this tshuva is from 1946. And he, Rav Herzog writes to him, Harav Hadogol, Muhtabini Musim, Na'ada Reishman Amekayim, Rav Palim Lechizak, Dat Kachenu, Levinyan Sion, Shulshalat Ayuchasim, Kavod Shem Tifato, Rav Levi Rabinovich Shlita. Rav of the United Hebrew Congregations of Johannesburg, South Africa. And what was the question? Exactly this question. South Africa was always a bastion of Zionism. Until today, you might say that there's no other Jewish community in the world that is so strongly Zionistic. Even the Haredi outreach that's in South Africa, such as Esha Torah, Chabad, but every type of Jewish organization there is heavily tinged with a right-wing Zionist outlook. And the process of changing the Havara of the main shul in Johannesburg to Havara Sfardit. They want to identify with Israel. This is like in Bnei Akiva, growing up, Yitzchak and I grew up in Bnei Akiva in North America, and there we spoke Hebrew, Bahavara Sfardit, Anachnu Yisraelim, Anachnu Olim Arza. It was a different Hebrew than they taught us in elementary school, Yeshiva Salanta. And of course, Rav Herzog quotes Rav Kook to him, that Rav Kook felt that you're not allowed to change that Al Titosh Torah Imcha, and Rav Kook was very opposed, but Rav Herzog says historically it seems change was permissible, and he quotes the Hasidic movement. And here, of course, we come to the heart of an issue that hangs fire. The embers are still burning today. How many of you are Hasidim? Are you allowed to be a Hasid? These are serious questions. I put up a picture. This trip changed one attitude of mine. They've come into my office. There is now a new picture hanging. I'll tell you the story, it's not for now. Suffice it to say, it's a fabulous picture of the Rebbe. No? Rabavitcher Rebbe, who else are we talking about?
Rebbe. Do you have a picture of the Rabavitcher Rebbe in your office?
Hanging in the office.
Who did you think was going to be Derek Jeter?
He doesn't know who Derek Jeter is. You're dealing there with an Amaritz. Derek Jeter, Gedol Meshabar, it's 3,000 hits, but forget about that now. Back to, how are you, how many of you are Lubavitch? How many of you were picked up by Lubavitch? Come on. How many of you, your parents were made from? All right, one, I know many. There are endless people listening who are Lubavitchers and were picked up by Lubavitch. Baruch Hashem.
Good for him.
No, let me ask you a question.
You're liberal.
No, okay. Yitzchak, relax yourself. I'll explain it, but not now. Let me teach. Relax. Rabbi Rubin is, you have no idea. The world doesn't know my name, but everyone knows his name. When I walked into the shtibble in Bar Pah, 15 people jumped on me. The story with the Havdalah, they were like blown away. You know, they had you pinned as a conservative rabbi. But that story that I brought tears to my eyes, with the wine, with the mistake, with the rub, what a story.
He did say it.
I know he said it. I heard it with my own ears. You heard him with your ears. I heard him with my own ears. Of course he said it. Ask Reb Chaim, you'll see a hole in the ceiling. But leave it for another time. Gentlemen, are you allowed to be a chassid? Lubavitch daven Shabbos morning. What time do they daven? 9:30, right or wrong? 9:30, Ivisman Kriyat Shema. You go to the Kotel, Marif time, you'll see Chassidim davening Mincha when you're saying Bahurachum and it's pitch dark. Are you allowed to be a Chassid? It's a very serious question. Are they Jews or aren't they Jews? So Rav Herzog says here, that among the founders of Hasidus were Gaonei Olam. And he says, not only the Baal Shem Tov, and there's a lot of literature written, how great a Gaon was the Baal Shem Tov, how great a Gaon was the Toldot. But one thing we know for sure, the Baal Tanya, in the Rav Shulchan Aruch, in the Likutei Torah, you see the Baal Tanya was a Gaon Adir. And they validated Hasidus. And he says we have to understand that there are many different gates, and this too is a reliable expression of Torah. And if that's a reliable expression, then switching to Havarash Svadit, that all the Svadim Davin also has to be a reliable expression. Okay, and he goes into a whole analysis that we must reach the conclusion that it's like Shibolet Sibolet. You're certainly going to be Yotzei Davening. Now, in the latter part of the Tshuva, he raises another question. He says, in Eretz Yisrael, there's certainly no question that you would be allowed to switch if this is what you want to daven, if this is what the shul davens, if this is what the people daven, you would be allowed to switch the Havarash Svardit. But he says in Chutz Laretz, how did Havarash Svardit begin? With Reformed Judaism. He says, how can we be certain that in your community, people will not misinterpret this act as being a reform act, a shinui reformi, v'zechu makol lo tahar. And he says, are you certain that your congregants will understand that it's not because of the reformers that you're doing it, but it's because you want to be connected to Eretz Yisrael? And he raises this issue. That problem, I think, is easily soluble. I can only tell you one little story. Many cynics have said to me, that my new book, the pictures alone are worth more than the price of the book. And then we start to discuss the pictures. There's one picture, I tell the story in the book, the full story is in the text. There's one story that says it all, one picture that says it all. It may be the greatest picture I ever took in my life. Havdalah in Leningrad, 1981. And if you notice, Danny Fratkin is making Havdalah on matches. Salman Kunik is holding matches and he's going like this, and on the table in the picture you see the Havdalah candle from Israel, a regular Ner Havdalah. So I asked them after Havdalah, they waited for us to come from the hotel to get there before they made Havdalah, and I asked them, why are you using matches? You have a Ner Havdalah. And they told me, Bezeh HaLashon, this Havdalah candle was Hivrichu et HaMeches. They snuck it in. It was brought in by tourists. We can't replace it. So we use matches. So I asked them, so why do you put it on the table? I mean, used matches for Gamanu. L'kasher et Atzmeinu im Eretz Yisrael. We put it on the table to tie ourselves, to bind ourselves to Eretz Yisrael. I don't have to tell you that's an overwhelming statement. I want you to know that the Israeli TV wanted to use that picture to introduce the Malava Malka Saturday night, but the Mossad wouldn't allow it. They were afraid people would ask how you got the picture, and my wife happens to be in the picture, although she's turned around. I don't think anyone could recognize her. She's looking at the wall, and nevertheless, they wouldn't allow it. But you see, in Rav Herzog's answer, that problem can very easily be solved because everyone in the shul has to be told that a mishnah in South Africa, they knew this, they felt it, they experienced this, they lived this, they internalized this. That, when is your wife coming home?
Thursday,
God. Yeah, I can see the way you're saying it, God willing, okay. With four children, believe me, that's a kala kavod to you. Everyone internalized it. We love Israel. We want to identify with Israel. South Africa has a very high percentage of aliyah. We're preparing ourselves. Lefizeh anachnu medabrim b'havara sfatit. Then he raises another problem. He says, but you're in South Africa. Who built South Africa? South Africa was built by the Lithuanians. Do you recall the Dean of Yeshiva College? What was his name in our time? Dean of Men, Shmuel Leib Zar, S-A-R. Remember Dean Zar? Where did his mother go? Where did his brother go? They were all in Lithuania, all in South Africa. All the Lithuanians who couldn't go to America or didn't want to go to America went to South Africa. It was a literature community. So I've heard that raises the problem. How can you get a community to switch? It'll be difficult for them. It'll be hard for them. They'll make mistakes in pronunciation. I need not tell you, we who come on Aliyah, until today when you talk with an Israeli, they break into English. They hear our Miftah Amerikoi. So they break into English. I'm a lahachasnik, so even though they break into English, I remain in Hebrew. Let them suffer with my American accent. I don't want to suffer with their Israeli accent, with their broken English. But nevertheless, the miftah remains. He says, how will they change? How will they master it? But here too, I believe he says, yetzei mizeh miftah chetz yosfadi vechetz yoshkenazi. And I too understand what I've heard Rav is saying, but I wouldn't worry. They'll believe me. The parents may speak with a broken half and half accent. The children already, it's a gradual process. I need not tell you how our children speak Hebrew who grew up in Israel. And I need not tell you, even our grandchildren can still speak perfect English, but believe me, the Hebrew, I have one grandson who just got into a very elite unit in the army, and when they interviewed him, they fainted when they found, you know, in the questions they asked, how much English do you know? And they he told me that Ki'ilu Hitalfu, when he broke into perfect English. So it's a gradual process. So with all Rav Herzog's misgivings, halacha l'maisa, he is very lenient and will allow them to change. Finally, let me make one more point today. And let me mention a very fascinating sefer. Gentlemen, there's a young rabbi who's becoming very famous. It's very fascinating. His family name is Lavi. His father was the consul to New York. His father came to my shiurim that I gave in New York in 1978 under the auspices of the Torah Culture Department of the Jewish Agency. And the son went back to the original family name, Lau. Harav Binyamin Lau. Do you recognize the name? He's up and coming, Tzohar. Part of that young rabbinate in Israel that's trying to institute a somewhat American type of rabbinate here and with the people and understanding the people and reaching out to the people. He did a doctorate at Bar Ilan. And it was fortunate enough that last Hanukkah I saw books advertised and I ordered a slew of little books and among them was his doctorate. I highly recommend it to you. Not for now. Now you're busy this year. You have your Adaya, you have Chilchat Nida, whatever you're learning. It's a busy year. But once you get Smicha and you can start studying on your own and mastering Kol HaTorah Kula Be'ezrat Hashem, this is one of the books, one of the volumes you should read. It's a doctorate on the Tshuvot of Rabbi Avadja Yosef. It's called Maran Ad Maran, from Maran Rabbi Yosef Karo to Maran Rabbi Avadja Yosef, Mishnato Hachil Chatit Shel Harav Avadja Yosef. Very fascinating doctorate. Misora La'am is the name of the publisher. I think it's a subdivision of Yediot. Yediot does a lot of publishing of Svarim of interest to people like us. And beginning on page 198, he discusses the whole question of transferring Nusach, transferring Havara. He discusses Rav Gorin, and Rav Ovadia is 100% in favor. We should all be davening Nusach Sfarad, Bahavara Sfardit. And his argument, and we'll come back to this in many different Shuvat, is that we're in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, who is the Maradiara? Rabbi Yosef Karo. And if Rabbi Yosef Karo is the Maradiara of Eretz Yisrael, then Nusach Eidot HaMizrach is infinitely more correct than Ashkenaz. He has very strong language here against Nusach Sfarad. How many of you daven Nusach Sfarad? Nusach Sfarad is basically a Nusach Ashkenaz, where the Hasidim made a few changes to feel important, to feel different, as we explained half an hour ago. In Tzva Hagana Yisrael, all of you know Rav Gorin as the chief rabbi of the IDF, Major General Shlomo Gorin, tried to introduce Nusach Achid. Nusach Achid, Rav Ovadia totally dismisses it and calls it another imitation of Nusach Sfarad, which is essentially Nusach Ashkenaz. But if you really want to daven properly, you have to daven Nusach Eidot HaMizrach, and the Asses, anyone who was born with Eidot HaMizrach, Chas v'chalila, he should change to Sfarad or Ashkenaz. But those of you who come from Mokum Shenahagu, where you davened Ashkenaz or Sfarad, you can change to Nusach Eidot HaMizrach, and that is the most valid Nusach al Admat HaKodesh. And finally, Rakefet's witticism on Nusach Achid, and I've said this many times, I spent after 15 years in the Israeli Defense Forces, all I can tell you is, whenever you came to Davin and you picked up the Nusach Achid Siddur, it still gave you no clue of what the Chazan would daven. And all that I can say about Nusach Achid is that in every shul in the IDF, the Chazan sets the Nusach. And there's a big advantage to that, because you learn in the course of time how to say Kedusha in Svarad, Ashkenaz, Eidot HaMizrach, Teimani, you master everything. And Rakefet's proposal is that any Siddur printed in Israel should have all the Nuskaot for Kedusha. Outside of that, nothing else matters. It's a tshuva of the Netziv, right? Tvila Balachash, etc. Gentlemen, to reiterate, we opened up our 53rd year of teaching Vani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu. When I walked into class, I was in my 70s. I now leave the classroom in my 20s. What did we do today? We reviewed, brought you right into the material, Rav Kook, Rav Herzog, Rav Ovadia Yosef, with some sideshows dealing with the Rav de Chatam Sofer and Rabbi Benny Lau. Next week we'll pick up exactly where we left off, and we will come into more questions dealing with Shinui Nischach and Beit Knesset, and then we'll come into the topic that will occupy us for a number of months, Chilufei Minchagim, with a married couple. Tomorrow morning, 9 sharp, Be'ezrat HaNatneli of Kofi. You don't have time to eat, bring your breakfast to class. Everyone can enjoy, sit back and enjoy. We're coming into Zionism, and I have to tell you, the shiurim I'm giving Monday morning and leading into now are among the most important shiurim I will ever give. I'm going to deal with Herzl. I have something to show you that will blow your mind. I'll sail into Mizrahi, Agudah, and we will reach Be'ezrat HaNatan Le'yav Kolach Das Teira later this year in depth. These are very important topics because students will bother you and eat your heart out on these topics, and perhaps I can be a little helpful in preparing you with answers that will ring home. Once again, I announce that next week we have class Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday evening, 7:30 at the Great Synagogue, is the official book launch. The ones in America and Canada, all that I went through, do not count. This is the real book launch, and I model HaKadosh Baruch Hu, very great individuals will grace me with a few words of introduction. And do me a favor, give me what I have here. I have a lot of freebies to give out. I have more, but let me go. Freebies, I get so much material, I have no place to put it, so I just want to give out to the boys to appreciate. This is for Rabbi Rubin. This is from Rabbi Usher Weiss, a Gon Sheba Ga'inim. If only we could get him here, you would be the happiest young man alive. Some of you might become Chassidim, but that will be a small price to pay. Look, this is from Michala. Someone threw it into Seamus. It's dealing with Mishnayot in Sanhedrin. Thousands of Xerox sources. If anyone is interested, grab it. If you have to teach, you have a world of material here. This is, if anyone is a religious Zionist, from the world of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Here you are. I couldn't bear to throw this out. If you're interested, it is yours. I see we have no Zionists here. No Sephardic Zionists. If we mentioned Rabbi Benny Lau, this is from Sof Shavuah of Maariv, August 12th, my children saved it for me, a fabulous article on Rabbi Benny Lau and the demonstrations against high prices on food, apartments, etc. It's an article worth reading if you read modern Hebrew, and you should. It's an article that I say is required. This is a pamphlet by Yeshiva University, the Dean's Report for the Center for the Jewish Future. And let me tell you, after reading this, I am inspired. I don't understand why YU is bankrupt, but boy, this is an inspiration, what Rabbi Kenny Brander has achieved. And I have to say, I see the kids come here in the middle of the year, the summer programs. I have to say, I believe 90% of what's written here. Generally, when you read publicity, you believe 40%. I believe 90%. Gentlemen, Rav Chaim, this is on Rav Pinto, Rav David Hananya Pinto. If you want to know what's going on in the Kabbalistic, Hasidic, Sephardic, Ashkenazic world, this is only in Israel. This is a Sephardic Hasidic Rebbe who grew up on the laps of the Gedolei Yisrael in Panovich. I found this so fascinating. Wow. Next. This book I will review in class much later. I'm going to give Shayurim on it when I deal with Torah and the Western world. This is the introduction to the book that just came out. It's a bestseller in Israel. Rab Chaim Sabato interviewing Rab Aaron Lichtenstein. It is something very special. This is the introduction.
When did it translate
it? The English, I don't know. How do you translate such beautiful Hebrew into English? But knowing Rab Sabato, it'll be translated. This is Nishma from Toronto, Canada, Rabbi Benjamin Hecht, the YU graduate. Very fascinating insights on Parshat HaShavua. Gentlemen, take what you wish until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow morning at 9. Das Vedanya. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming and turning me into a youngster. Ruchim to you.
You didn't make me famous, you made me infamous.
Famous, famous. Everyone wants to know who you are. Who you are. Are you Orthodox? Are you conservative?